Session number 12778.
Sergeant Reel 6.
And joining up again with headquarters 151 Brigade. During the course of that afternoon, in fact, the Brigadier Senior, with his liaison officer, had taken a wrong turning and had been ambushed by the enemy between 151 Brigade and 69 Brigade, and he disappeared. He rejoined us the following day, having been wounded in the arm. He and his staff officer had hidden until the enemy had been cleared out of that area before rejoining 151 Brigade. But in fact, he had to be evacuated, and very shortly afterwards, we got a new brigadier who was with us a shorter time before he in turn got wounded, that I can't even remember his name. However, back to D-Day. We were told by 151 Brigade that the move of the Army Column was not going to take place because the Dorsets were heavily engaged still down on the beaches, and as were the 8th Armoured Brigade. And so that evening came, a slight drizzle, but after all our terrors and apprehensions about the murder on the beaches, which we were going to have to go through, it had been what we all called at the time a real doddle, the quietest day of the war, just about as far as we were concerned. On the following day, I waited for news of the armoured column dashing off, but nothing happened. And we pushed forward with 151 Brigade, who pushed over the road, the St. Ledger Road, St. Ledger Corn Road, down towards the railway line. And it wasn't until 11:30 that night, on the 7th of June, that we suddenly got the orders to assemble the armoured column at first light on the 8th of June to advance on Villers-Bocage. Now, I am quite certain, after my little experience up there on the evening of 6th of June, that if the armoured column had been able to go that night, on the evening of D-Day, well, there was absolutely nothing to stop it. But having wasted more than 36 hours, it was going to be too much to expect that we were going to have an easy drive to Villers-Bocage. We assembled at Ruckfield behind St. Ledger, but no move was made until 10 a.m. on the morning of the 8th of June. The line of march was Lucel, Audria, Saint-Pierre, Juvigny, Tilly, Villers-Bocage, with the railway line just south of Lucel as the start line. And as so often happens in war, if you are ever ambitious as to where your start line is, you have to fight to get it. And when the leading tanks got towards the railway line near Lucel, it was discovered that Lucel was occupied by the enemy, and a company attack had to be put in by the Dorsets. Then, as we pushed forward, it was found that there were further enemy localities beyond Lucel, and the remainder of the Dorset, or one Dorset, were then committed to fighting their way through the various little complex of hamlets which make up Audria. And so we had not moved very far that first day. The ultimate plan was for one Dorset, the Northumberland Hussars, and my two platoons to establish a strong point at Villers-Bocage on arrival, round which the armoured brigade would operate, creating mayhem in all directions. But it obviously wasn't going to be quite as easy as everyone had thought originally. Well, there were, as night fell on that day, 8th of June, there were one Dorset battling away in this little string of villages, which of houses and so on, which make up Audrey. And there appeared to be nothing whatsoever which my company was going to be required for. The Sherwood Rangers, after all, had machine guns on their tanks. But at shortly after midnight, I was woken up and told to report to Brigadier Craycroft, the brigade commander, at his tank, which was about 100 yards up the road. And when I got there, he told me that a squadron of the Sherwood Rangers had succeeded in bypassing Audrey across country and had got on to Point 103, the dominating feature south of La Haute Audrey. That was the southernmost Audrey hamlet. But he said he obviously couldn't leave the squadron there unsupported. And so my company and the battery of the Northumberland Hussars were to move cross country to join it. And he'd had a troop of the Sherwood Rangers sent back to lead us up. Well, we had a bit of a nightmare journey. We were going through enemy territory. We knew that the Germans were in the Audrey hamlets on our right flank in some force. We didn't know whether who else was around. It was very dark, and it was boggy, and a number of my machine gun carriers, brain gun carriers, became bogged. But fortunately the tanks returned and towed us out, and by 2:30 in the morning we were up on Point 103. And it was far too dark to do anything except establish a machine gun section at each corner of the Sherwood Rangers close lager and hope for the best. Well, when first light came, it was apparent that Point 103 was a plateau. The southernmost edge of the plateau dipped towards the villages of Saint-Pierre and Tilly-sur-Seul, but had got no cover on it at all, at the bare slope. However, 100 yards back from the rim of the plateau was the typical bocage bank, high bank, with trees and bushes, which did provide some protection from enemy fire and observation. And so I put my two platoons into position at either end of this bank. It wasn't ideal because the enemy could get within 150 yards of us in dead ground, and only the rooftops and upper floors of their houses in Saint-Pierre to the south of us were actually visible from the gun positions. But it would have been suicide to put the guns any further forward. And so 3 and 5 platoons dug in as fast as possible. The anti-tank guns of the Northumberland Hussars dug in behind, and the Sherwood Rangers lined up just behind our bank. Well, we could hear the battle for Audrey going on behind us. And then we heard the approach of enemy tanks coming in from the south. And they engaged the forward tanks, the Sherwood Rangers, in the bank just alongside it, knocking out some of them. And the remainder of the squadron withdrew very rapidly to the reverse slope behind Point 103, leaving my two platoons completely isolated. And the enemy tanks then stood off in hull-down positions, just about 120, 150 yards ahead of us, and started shelling our forward hedgerow with high-explosive shells. And these burst in the trees above the platoon positions and acted like outburst shells, and shrapnel came straight down on top of the gun positions underneath. and so that I started to get casualties, particularly in 3 platoon on the right flank of the feature. On several occasions, when the Tiger tanks cruised rather too far forward on our front, with our turrets open, our machine guns open fire to make them close down. Well, the situation seemed a little bit precarious, because if the enemy put in a determined attack from the south, he'd be right on top of my 2 platoons before encountering our own tanks and the anti-tank guns on a reverse slope. And we were therefore very cheered when, soon after midday, recce parties from 1 Dorset arrived to say they were doing well in clearing the Audrea hamlets and were going to come and join us. And they also brought the news that 8 DLI had come under command of 8 Armoured Brigade and were to advance through Point 103 to capture Saint-Pierre. I remember a nice little experience I had about then, when 3 Platoon had a corporal badly wounded by shellfire and came up in the wireless asking for help. And the only way one could get help to them was to send my jeep forward to get him out right up the gun position and evacuate him that way, since we had got no other medical cover up on the position. And so I thought, well, I suppose I had better drive the jeep myself. So I said to my driver, right, I will go and get Corporal Pillsbury. I think you'd better get out. It's looking extremely dicey up there, because the whole of the field immediately behind this hedgerow was being shelled like fury at that time. A real barrage coming down the field. But one had to do something. So, rather to my disappointment, I think instead of him saying, no, sir, I will go, he said, right, sir, and got out of the jeep. So I drove forward up to a gap in the hedge, which led into the field where all these shells were bursting. And I remember saying, oh, God, please stop the shells. If you stop them, I'll be good for always, or worth this effect. And suddenly and miraculously, they stopped. And I was able to get Corporal Pillsbury out. But I think many times during the war, one vowed to the Almighty that one would be a very much better person if one was allowed to survive. And promises didn't last all that long. Well, up in the afternoon of that day, Brigadier Craycroft arrived up with his TAC HQ in a tank, and that was quite nice, because it meant I could shelter beside his tank, because there was still a lot of mortaring and shelling going on. 8 DLI attacked on Saint-Pierre and got in all right. We supported with fire, but it could only really bounce bullets off the houses because we couldn't see the ground. And then shortly afterwards, about half past five, I think, or six, 1 Dorset arrived up on Point 103, and we felt very much happier. But we were quite proud to have held the most advanced point of the bridgehead for the best part of one day. We then readjusted the positions a bit, and I moved one of my platoons back from the hedgerow to a company of the 1 Dorset to protect the left flank. And this platoon had a nasty experience in the middle of the night when a part of the enemy blundered into the platoon position, were challenged and put up their hands to surrender. And Dupre, the platoon commander, sent 3 soldiers forward to bring them in, who were promptly shot by another party of Germans who were a little distance behind the original party and who hadn't been seen. And the guns, as Vickers opened up, and on the enemy, killing three, wounding others, and two officers and 12 surrendered. I think from Panzerlehr Division. Later that morning, at first light, 8 July, were very heavily counterattacked in Saint-Pierre and had to partly withdraw. We helped to fight off a tank and infantry attack on B Company later that day as well. And that night again, we were asked to fire and support the same company of the one Dorset. The next day, 8 July, was still clinging grimly to the outskirts of Saint-Pierre. While on the right, 7th Armoured Division, who had now come ashore, were battling along our right flank, but not getting very far. 69 Brigade were ordered to come up on our left, or point 103, and take a village called Christo. And I was told to support this attack from the flank with my two platoons on point 103. I mention this only because the company commander, the Dorset, in whose area 3 platoon had been, came to see me and was extremely offensive. We'd been cadets together at Sandhurst, knew each other quite well, but I was letting him down, leaving his company to be written off by the enemy, etc. I said, well, if you don't like it, you go and see the brigadier, because the orders come from him. But people were getting, I think, very tired and a bit neurotic by this time. And poor old Dorset had been having a heck of a battle. At dusk at night, enemy tanks closed in on point 103 from the south and southwest. Shermans were blazing everywhere, but the Northumberland Hussars anti-tank guns did some good shooting. And I went across to Brigadier Craycross tank to see if he thought all was well. And I was hailed by the CO of the 24th Lancers, who was sitting on his ground, on the ground with an arm in a sling, having been wounded, and leaning against the Brigadier's tank. And he handed me a rifle and said, put a round in the breech, will you? At least I'll take one of them with me. So I thought, good God, is it as bad as that, is it? But shortly after it, all the firing ceased. And in fact, it was a sort of final demonstration by the enemy before they were pulling out. And by early next morning, they had pulled out, the enemy had left Saint-Pierre, and all was well on our own particular front. But it was quite unpleasant little battle. We had learnt this lesson about shells landing in trees and exploding downwards. And from then onwards, all our carriers, Brent gun carriers, carried railway sleepers and corrugated iron to provide instant overhead cover so that we didn't have unnecessary casualties again. That night, just before dark, we got relieved by another company, and we heard to our delight that we were coming back under command of 151 Brigade, because although we'd had an exciting time with 8th Armoured Brigade, we hadn't known them before this particular battle, and no soldier really likes going to war with strangers. And it was also very clear that the Sherman tanks of 8th Armoured Brigade were sitting ducks for the German Tigers and Panthers. And while we felt great sympathy for the tank crews, we knew we'd be a lot happier back with our infantry friends. Now, the battles which went on from the middle of June until the middle, really, of August, were very repetitive and very much the same. So I think if I just give you an example of what happened over the next couple of days after we had left point 103, it perhaps gives the picture of what became almost a daily chore the rest of the time. On the 13th of June, the 7th Armoured Division was switched to a new axis of advance, which was intended to outflank the Panzerlehr Division on our front, who were then expected to pull back, and we were going to follow up the retreating enemy. But far from withdrawing, the enemy resisted strongly, and it was decided that a full-scale divisional attack would have to be launched the following day. And in this attack, 151 Brigade were to be on the left of the division, 231 on the right, and the tasks of 131 were to capture a village called Verrières on the left with 60 LI, and push on to a little village called Mesnil-Landon, while 9 DLI on the right were to capture Langeve. And the company tasks were to provide overhead covering fire for the early stages of the brigade attack by engaging targets between Tilly and Langeve. And these were all indirect fire tasks. We couldn't actually see the targets, but we were engaging them off a map from where targets were alleged to be. We couldn't see them because of the bocage country and the trees and banks and so on. And as soon as 6 and 9 DLI were on their objectives in Verrières and Langeve, then our platoons, or two of our platoons, were to move forward and reorganise with them on the objective. So just before HR for this attack, which was at 10 o'clock on the morning of the 14th of June, I think it was by now, I lined up 12 Vickers guns in a line in a cornfield, and I stood on the bonnet of my jeep on the left of the gun line, and we opened fire in with one coordinated lovely noise, superb noise. And although we got a certain number of enemy bullets flying back, we completed the fire plan, and forward went the platoons in their Bren gun carriers to link up with the 6 and 9 DLI. 9 DLI were in Langeve by 12 o'clock, but had suffered very severe casualties, including the commanding officer who'd been killed. And 6 DLI also had very heavy casualties, but had secured Verrières by 3 o'clock in the afternoon. When 3 Platoon told me that they were in Langeve, I went forward to see them. And I met Major John Mogg, the 2 NIC of the 9 DLI, who'd just taken over command of the battalion from Colonel... I can't remember his name, who CO had just been killed. Major Mogg was later to become General Sir John Mogg, and I was to serve in his staff in future time. But that was the only time I think we both shared the same rank. Anyhow, he was getting a real grip of things in the middle of the village. He told me that he'd ordered the platoon commander to sight his sections to cover the approaches into the village from Tilly and La Sanodia, that is the 231 Brigade area. He also said that because 9 DLI had suffered such heavy casualties, the battalion was holding a much smaller perimeter than originally planned, and he was sorry that both machine gun sections would therefore have to be outside the nearest infantry locality for protection, because otherwise they wouldn't be able to see anywhere to fire at. However, as I thought, the counterattacks, if they came in, were more likely to come from the south than from the east or west, and that seemed acceptable. So I left 3 platoon, Dupre, digging in. And I went back to company headquarters, and from there on to Verrières, when it was reported captured. And Verrières, 6th GLI was being commanded at that time by Major George Woods, who was again the second in command, because his CO, Colonel Green, had been carried off the landing craft to Southampton with malaria. And 6th GLI had done very, very well, but had nasty casualties. In the meantime, back at Langeve, things were happening. Enemy tanks came in from the direction of Tilly, straight down the road towards Sergeant Ross, who was commanding the section of the 3 platoon covering the approaches from Tilly. And two Panther tanks came straight down the road. And the section opened fire on the tanks at 100 yards and made them close down. But the section OP had been spotted by the enemy, which machine gunned it. And Sergeant Ross was very seriously wounded, and two of his soldiers also wounded. And the platoon sergeant, who knew how important it was to keep the guns in action against infantry who were likely to be following the tanks, German infantry, he raced across open ground, took over the section, and got the guns firing again. Well, the tanks passed within 15 yards of the gun positions, but were in fact unsupported by infantry. When they bumped the 9 DLI, the tanks turned round and came back again, down past the gun positions, but were in turn destroyed by a squadron of the 47th Dragoon Guards with 9 DLI. And exactly a similar thing happened on the to the other section of 3 platoon. They came under fire from tanks advancing from the other side down the main road, and lost one soldier wounded. But during a very confused period, 6 Panther tanks were destroyed by our own tanks and 9 DLI. Well, I'd been in Verrières at this time, listening on my radio to the battle in Langeve, which seemed to have come to finally to an end, when I received a message ordering me to report at once to the brigadier in Langeve. I wasn't certain, there was a direct road leading between Verrières and Langeve. I wasn't certain whether it was clear of enemy, but as the brigadier seemed to be in very much of a rush to see me, I decided to take the risk of driving down it to save time. And halfway down this road from Verrières to Langeve, I suddenly saw two German half-tracks standing in the trees on the right of the road with a small cluster of German soldiers around them. And I was they were as surprised as I was. And I managed to get past before they could open fire. When I got to Langeve, I was told by the brigadier that 9 DLI were being relieved by the Gloucesters from 56th Brigade,